In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
During the late 1990s, I was, brace yourself now, a Buffalo Bills fan. Don't judge. In any event, in 1998, the Buffalo Bills owner had spent big money, $25 million, to land Rob Johnson, a rising quarterback star from the Jaguars. That same offseason, the pro personnel director for the team signed free agent Doug Flutie as a backup. That year, the Bills did not have a good offensive line, but Johnson was also very immobile and a frequent sitting duck in the backfield. 5 games into the season, Rob got injured on yet another sack. Flutie was put in and came from behind to win the game. And then he won next week's game and continued to win, and this launched a quarterback controversy that would last throughout the rest of the season and into the next. Flutie was a scrambler. He was exciting, and he was fun to watch, getting the crowds behind him. But management wanted Johnson, in whom they had invested a lot of money. On paper, Johnson probably had more pure quarterback skills, assuming there wasn't another team on the field with defenders trying to tackle him. But Flutie was the proverbial little guy, the scrappy underdog who just found ways to win. Coaches and management kept trying to put Johnson into the game, but he kept performing badly, so they'd be forced to pull him, send Flutie in, who'd win the game. The next year, coaching staff gave up and just made Flutie the starter. Flutie led the team to a playoff appearance, going 10-5 as a starter. But on the day of the playoff, management decided to pull Flutie and start Johnson. Coach Wade Phillips would later say that he had been ordered by the Bills owner to do so. That playoff game ended with the famous, or infamous, Music City Miracle, with the Titans beating the Bills. During the offseason, management cut the coaching staff and Flutie to put the controversy to bed. During the controversy, it was more than just fans, but the Bills players themselves who had their favorite quarterback. Imagine, though, if players decided they just weren't going to play if their quarterback wasn't the starter, and so they were just going to sit it out. Because that's what's happening right now with Republicans. Many Republicans I know tend to be big sports fans, and I assume that means that at some point in their life, they have also played team sports. And yet Republicans seem to have forgotten that the most important thing in a team sports is making sure that your team beats the other team. On today's show, we're looking further down the road than just Super Tuesday and the next round or two of primaries. Because if Republicans, and especially conservatives, want to beat the other team, Democrats and progressives, they better start finding ways to get fellow Republicans on their side without destroying their fellow Republicans and the Republican Party as a team. And I'd like to welcome to iSpy Jane Carroll. Jane is the host of the Jane Carroll Show on KUIK 1360 AM. That broadcasts out of Portland, the same radio station which also broadcasts our show. Jane's show airs from 3 to 6 p.m. on weekdays. It can be heard anywhere via KUIK.com's website. Jane is an absolutely terrific host. I thoroughly enjoy her show. She's always got sharp and astute analysis, but always respectful and never abrasive. Jane, it's so good to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, you know, Super Tuesday is in the past now, but we have a long, long way to go. And I know that your favorite candidate right now is Ted Cruz. So let's kind of start right there. What is it about Ted Cruz that especially appeals to you?
Well, I think he's the real deal. I really do think he is a solid conservative. I think he's absolutely brilliant, almost too brilliant in a way for politics, because I think he's difficult to relate to for a lot of people. But I think he gets it, he understands it, and he's said to be the most unpopular man in Congress, but I sort of like the reasons that he's unpopular. I think he's gone back there and kept his word, while many of the Republicans have said all those same things that Ted Cruz said on the campaign trail, but when they get the chance to actually do it, they go AWOL. So yeah. I like Ted Cruz for that reason.
Well, and if everybody noticed, she did that without tearing down the other opponents, and that's one of the things I really like about Jane. But you bring up a really interesting point that I think is kind of, in some ways, actually hurting candidates like Cruz and Rubio. Is, like you say, a lot of these candidates that are there now in Washington, D.C. ran as solid conservatives, and they all supported the conservative ideals and principles, and then they get there and they violate them every single time. And do you think in some ways that that is maybe coming back to haunt Cruz simply because everybody else that's there claims they're also conservatives?
Well, but I don't think Cruz has done that the way most of them have done. I mean, most of the candidates go back there and it's almost as if they mock us. And they don't have a respect for the base. They just need us when they need us to give them control of the House first, then the Senate. Now they want the White House. And I think they don't take us seriously. And so, and I think Ted Cruz does take us seriously. And I think he's been punished for it by those in power because he makes them look bad.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So in terms of Super Tuesday, it was a pretty good night, I thought, for Cruz. I think he did better than some people probably thought that he was going to. So what was your takeaway from Super Tuesday night?
I'm going to be real honest with you. I think it was a decent night for Ted Cruz. He won his home state, and he won it very handily. And one of the things that impresses me most about Ted Cruz is his ground game and that he is a state-of-the-art campaigner. I've been long frustrated with conservatives who don't have state-of-the-art campaigning. Romney was just dwarfed by Obama the use of technology and ground forces, and it was like, you know, the dark ages versus the modern era. Cruz has that kind of organization. But in general, I would have to give Super Tuesday a C-plus for Cruz because this should have been his night. He should have won in Alabama and in Georgia and he should have won in South Carolina, and he didn't. And those are the states where Super Tuesday sort of was his firewall. Now, he had a better night certainly than Mr. Rubio, and he has some momentum coming out of there. He's somebody that can say he's actually beaten Donald Trump in a primary and in a caucus. Nobody else can say that. But I think he's going into some states now where up north, he didn't do well up north, and he's not looking like a national candidate right now. Is there time to turn that around? Yes, but I'm a little nervous about what happened last night.
Well, and I think that's a really astute analysis. He was supposed to do much better early in the race. I think a lot of people assumed that Super Tuesday was going to be his real launching point. As we got closer to Super Tuesday, I'm not sure that quite as many people thought that so much anymore. But you do bring up a really interesting point in the sense that a lot of the Southern voters really should have gone for Cruz and have not. And now, of course, since it is shifting more towards the North, the next couple of races might really hurt him.
Yes, and of course, you know, Rubio has himself up against the wall. He has to win in Florida.
Yeah, yeah,
and of course the debate that was on this week, which I haven't watched yet because I haven't had the opportunity to do so, but that could be very relevant too, as many of the debates have been really relevant to the primaries that immediately follow.
Well, how do you think that Cruz will get past this notion of being a so-called regional candidate?
I don't know. I think it's a real challenge for him. And the thing with Cruz is that he sort of abandoned his outsider role. And he and Trump were doing very well in the outsider role. And he sort of has, because they have been the top two contenders, he's sort of running against Trump now. And so they've divided that. And I think as part of that, Cruz has lost some of his mojo. He is a real rebel. He is somebody that's going to fight D.C. He's somebody that's made a career out of that. And that's not coming across right now because he's fighting with Donald Trump.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break right there. Coming up, we're going to be talking about some more of looking down the road ahead for both Cruz and Trump, and as well as the other candidates that are out there. And then coming up, we're going to be talking about a lot of the divisiveness that's going on right now and how do we overcome it. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking national level politics today with Jane Carroll. She is the host of The Jane Carroll Show, which airs weekdays, Monday through Friday, on one of iSpy's broadcasting stations, KUIK 1360 in the Portland area. And it can also be heard anywhere via KUIK.com. Absolutely great show, always filled with very astute analysis and no yelling, which I always like, just common sense. Jane has been actively involved in local and national politics for decades as she has served as a policy advisor, speechwriter, manager, and media specialist. And so we were talking about Cruz and maybe how he starts turning things around. let's maybe talk about one of the things that has been going around that really bothers me, because I would support either Trump or Cruz right now wholeheartedly. But one of the things that really bothers me is this notion that I see on all over Facebook and Twitter is this Never Trump meme. They had we're talking about that. The analysts were on Fox News the night of Super Tuesday. And it really bothers me that these people are saying, well, they're going to stand on principle and never vote for Trump. I hate to say it, but a Never Trump hashtag is the same thing as saying always Hillary. So what are your thoughts on that?
I could not agree more. Matter of fact, I think it's a meme that's being played by the opposition. Mm-hmm. And if we don't coalesce around whoever the nominee is and let go of these differences, Hillary Clinton, to me, is we cannot let that happen. But, you know, yeah. Mark, conservatives, we do this all the time. If our perfect candidate, which doesn't exist, by the way,
that's right.
is not getting the nomination, then we get on our principled high horse and stay home.
Yeah.
And that's why I live in a state, you live in a state where Democrats dominate, because there are no perfect candidates, and we're very passionate, conservatives are very intense, and it's we tend to, Democrats, they get mad at each other, they fight, they hold their nose, and they go to the polls and vote whoever the nominee is. And a lot of people are going to be doing that with Hillary. The Bernie Sanders people will do it. The Hillary people did it with Barack Obama when mm-hmm. they were very furious. We stay home. And people that were unhappy with Romney for what, because he's a Mormon or for he wasn't conservative enough, they stayed home. If Mitt Romney had gotten as many votes as John McCain had gotten in 2008,
right.
he would have beaten Obama.
That's right. Yeah. And it bothers me in the sense that what I will hear from some of the people, and I've got some on my Facebook. I mean, Facebook to me has gotten so distasteful that I don't even go on there very much other than to check in on my family and post something that I find amusing.
I've never seen it get this ugly. Really is. It's very ugly.
No. Actually, before we go where I was heading, you have a weekday show. You're on every day, Monday through Friday. Is what you hear on air the same things that you're seeing on Facebook, or is there a difference there?
Very different. Very different. I think there's always, you know, people are more gutsy to go on the air and be somebody than they would normally be, but they're totally unabashed. Whatever good, mean, or ugly thing they want to say, they feel like they're anonymous, and they're sitting there writing and they're letting, and it there should be a filter. Right. Should be a filter that you use for yourself, because I've seen people that, you know, have long been allies just call each other the most vicious of names this time.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the thing that where I was going with that was the thing that I keep seeing is that people say, well, they're going to stand on principle, I'm going to vote my principles, I'm going to write in Cruz, or I'm going to write in Trump. And I do tend to see this more from the Cruz supporters because they tend to be the deeper conservatives. But again, that bothers me in the sense that you're saying that you're going to vote on principles. Well, but there's more than one principle at stake there, because you also have the principle of team play, and that you had chosen to be a conservative, or you had chosen to be a Republican, and isn't it important that your team wins at this point? So you've got that as well.
Yeah, and it's an innate thing with being a conservative, because that comes with the territory. I'd sort of, when we started this whole process, I think most people were saying what you're saying. Whoever wins, all those people, all 16, 17 of them, any one of them is better than a Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
But that, as the campaign has gotten more intense and more vicious, that has not happened. But the other thing that's happening here that's different than usual, I have never seen the party and the principals in power turn on the front runner the way they have on Trump. And I've become convinced that the party would rather have Hillary than Trump or Cruz.
Yes. And in fact, there was an article just out on Wednesday where Bill Kristol is essentially promoting that very idea. And let's come back to that, though. We only got about a couple minutes here with you in this segment. Well, I'm curious to hear, because you are a Cruz supporter, I know that you have know a lot of Cruz supporters. What is it that especially seems to scare them about Trump?
This is not what I think, but I think they think he's not the real deal, that he is saying these things just to say them, that when he gets in there, he's really, many of them actually believe he's a Democrat in hiding, or that he's out there to try and help Hillary. It's a lot of conspiracy theory stuff, and I think the fact when you're intensely involved in a campaign and the person that's in the way of you getting what you want, which in this case was Trump, is Trump, you tend to start focusing on people in almost an irrational way, and it's counterproductive, because I actually see the Cruz people and the Trump people being natural allies under normal circumstances.
Yes, that is absolutely right. I think if they could just put aside the vitriol that each one of them feels for the other, I think they would be tremendous allies. And I really long for those days, actually, when Cruz and Trump almost were seeming like they were going to be partnering up there as president and vice president. Let's take a break a little early here, because I really want to talk to you about this notion of the party hanging itself simply because they're going against the front runner. Everyone stay with us. Lots more with Jane Carroll. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about national politics. We're talking with Jane Carroll. She is the host of The Jane Carroll Show, which airs Monday through Friday on KUIK.com if you're not in the Portland area. And Jane has been a policy advisor, speechwriter, manager, and media specialist. Been around local and national politics for a long time. And her show is always respectful and thoughtful, and that's why we love to talk to her. Loving to talk to her, I should say, today. And so, Jane, let's talk maybe about that Bill Kristol article that came out earlier this week. And it was really shocking, because one of the things that he is talking about is this notion of a brokered convention. And that's the strategy that the insiders are now laying out, is that if Trump goes to the convention with less than 50%, the other delegates can coalesce around another candidate to take the nomination from Trump, who assuming going into the convention at that point, has the most delegates. If there's one thing in this race that truly frightens me, it is that, a brokered convention. So what are your thoughts?
I think a brokered convention, if Trump goes into the convention with close to the number of delegates that he needs, or even has them, because Bill Kristol has been opposed to Trump from day one, and he has been saying that he won't support him regardless, and I just think Bill Kristol is somebody that has long been a tool of the Democrats. He's somebody that long ago was always booked on shows because, as the conservative, back when they never used to have conservatives, because he would always trash the conservatives in the party. The more conservative they were, the more unconventional, the more popular they were in a way. He represents the safe status quo. He's not really relevant anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the problem. That attitude, I mark my words, if anybody is the front runner and going into the convention and is close to the number of delegates and has won out through the primary and the caucus process, and the party turns their back on them, there isn't anybody that can win against Hillary. There's nobody that can win. Because if the party picks the nominee versus the will of the people, it's over.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with that, because, I'm just imagining that scenario where Trump goes in, he's got pretty close to the numbers needed, just needs a few more, and they essentially come in and take the nomination from him. I can't imagine what that would be like on the other side of that. The Trump voters would just say, forget it, I am done. You may have a good number of people actually that are Cruz supporters or Rubio supporters at that point also saying they're done with the party. And you are essentially ushering in Hillary at that point.
Yeah, it says you might as well just write her a blank check. And that's because the one thing that we are united on is Hillary has to be stopped. And I really do feel as this moves forward that I wish the nomination would get sort of solidified way before the convention so we could start the healing process.
Yeah.
That the emphasis will be on Hillary. That is something that we all have in our blood. This is just one of the most corrupt people that's ever run for public office. Her agenda is 4 more years on steroids of Barack Obama. She would be so disastrous for our country and for our country's future that this is the most important election of our lifetime. If we can't coalesce together under those circumstances and to do something right, we can't ever do it.
I think that's the other aspect that is so surprising by these so-called party insiders like Bill Kristol. I mean, they're almost happy to blow up the party in order to prevent somebody on their own team from getting into the White House.
Yeah, well, I think the Cruz camp feels that way. I think I know the Trump camp feels that way, that they would rather lose than have Trump or Cruz as the nominee. And why? Because they can't control either one of them, mm-hmm. and I think they feel they can control the other potential candidates that they're backing. You know, their whole plan with this with the primary process being changed, so they had proportional representation, was geared towards giving the nomination to Jeb Bush. Yeah, he might win some states. He'd come in second in a lot of the others. He'd get these delegates, and then as they moved into the states where Jeb Bush was slated to do well, like Florida, Ohio, et cetera, that he would have the momentum and going in, and it would be unstoppable. That plan hasn't worked for them, so they've moved to Rubio. And, you know, Rubio's won caucus, so he's up against the wall right now. So you're seeing people like Bill Kristol come out of the woodwork. It gets him more TV bookings, and it gets him, you know, all of a sudden he's relevant again. He's the worst thing that could happen to the party right now.
No, I absolutely agree. You know, I was talking to a diehard Cruz supporter the other day, and it occurred to me after I left that conversation, I'm driving home, is that, you know, we as conservative Republicans are just not being real smart when it comes to strategy here.
No.
In the sense that we have a lot of people coming back into the party, maybe that had left the party, and now a Trump or Cruz, whoever, for whatever reasons, we have a massive amount of new turnout on the Republican side. And when
I have no illusions about that, Mark. That's Trump. That is not any of the other candidates.
Well, and that being the case then, is that I'd look at that from a conservative standpoint and saying, look, we got all these people coming in into our doors. I mean, if I'm running a business, I've got all these new customers coming in. Shouldn't I be welcoming them? Instead, what I'm hearing from a lot of Cruz supporters is, how can you support Trump? You're the stupidest person in the world for supporting somebody like that. That would be like a customer service rep who was, you know, he's the techie and he really likes iPhones. Somebody comes in and says, well, I'd like to buy a Samsung. Well, aren't you just an idiot for wanting a Samsung instead of an iPhone? Don't you know anything? I mean, it boggles my mind that we're missing a grand opportunity here.
You've absolutely nailed it, Mark. The reason this is so serious is, as people, and it's not just the Cruz people, the Rubio people are doing the same thing. I don't hear the Kasich and the Carson people do the same thing too, but you know they're not in it, so they're not in the thick of it. But the people that are supporting Cruz and Rubio and the establishment party are basically saying to the people who are supporting Trump, you're idiots. He's an idiot. He's a racist. He's a homophobe. You're a dumbed down, low information voter if you support him. And you know something? That's exactly what all of us conservatives have been told for years by the left. We're stupid. We're Neanderthals. Yeah. We're rednecks. We don't have any values. We don't deserve to even have an opinion. And does that make us change our mind to become liberals and want to join them and think more warmly of them? No. We are being treated by some of our own colleagues just like we've been treated by the left. Name-calling and vicious assault. It's not right if Rubio does it. It's not right if Cruz does it. It's sure not right if Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan do it.
Oh, absolutely great point. And it's like having somebody come into your church. Oh, you're interested in being a Christian? Well, great. Here's a pamphlet. That's what conservatives ought to be doing right now. And unfortunately, we're driving people away rather than welcoming them to the party. Jane, unfortunately, we are up against the clock here. I want to thank you so much for your time today. Always enjoy your show. Always enjoy talking with you.
And I love iSpy Radio. It's a great show. I never miss it.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And welcome back. We're talking national-level politics today on the iSpy Radio Show, helping you to get a little more intelligence on big government. We just wrapped up with Jane Carroll, host of the Jane Carroll Show out of the Portland area on KUIK. She's not just one of my favorite radio hosts. Jane is also just one of my favorite people. Absolutely love Jane. And I'd like to welcome now Wayne Allen Root. He is the capitalist evangelist. I would like to welcome him back to iSpy Radio to continue the discussion, looking ahead on the path for the Republicans. Jane was a Cruz supporter. Wayne is for Trump. And Wayne is also a best-selling author and frequent radio guest, as well as a highly successful businessman. Wayne, it's always good to talk to you.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, Mark. Good to be on with your fans in beautiful Portland, Oregon. I was just up there, by the way. I was up there about a month ago at a big conservative Republican event, and I just never fail to think about what a beautiful place it is.
Oh, it is. It's unfortunate that the politics is not so beautiful, but the state itself
is very
beautiful.
I don't understand that, but, you know, who am I to talk? Because I'm born Jewish, and people, you know, everywhere I go, people ask me, why are Jews Democrats? And I don't have an answer, because to me the very definition of a Republican conservative is anybody who owns their own business, anybody who's educated, anybody who worked hard their whole lives, and anybody who loves God, family, and that describes almost every Jewish person I know.
Yes,
so it's crazy that they vote Democrat and that they're ultra-liberal.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. So I don't understand Portland either. If I lived there, you'd want to keep it nice. You'd want to keep it low tax. You'd want to keep it positive for businesses. And you'd vote Republican. Doesn't make sense to me.
No, it does not. And I say that as somebody that moved from New York, which, I mean, their politics didn't make much sense either. But at least I was on the conservative end of New York. I was over by Buffalo area and south of there. And, you know, it's another state that's controlled by one large population base, and the rest of the state is pretty conservative. But
I was just going to say, it's amazing how divided liberal states are. They're really not liberal. It's just one city controls everything. So,
yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Super Tuesday we had this week, and it's in the past, but we've got a long, long way to go here still. And I know that your favorite is Trump, so let's start there. What is it about Trump that especially appeals to you?
Well, listen, I wrote a book 2 years ago that was right on the money. It's called The Murder of the Middle Class. I was 2 years ahead of my time. It was a national bestseller. But, I mean, my hypothesis and my diagnosis was 2 years ahead of its time. Today, everyone recognizes that the middle class is getting murdered, and that's why a lot of people are voting for both Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, by the way, because it's just not a good country if you're in the middle. They try to destroy us in the middle. You know, the super rich are doing great, and the poor are taken care of by the Democratic Party, but anybody in the middle is screwed. And so, you know, that book summed it all up and gave 1,000 different statistics that proved, so that no one could ever question me. I didn't want to even be questioned. There's no way to question a book that has 1,000 statistics proving the middle class is going extinct and the middle class is being slaughtered. But there was a diagnosis in the back of the book, and it was a full chapter on how the Republican Party can win middle-class voters. And I swear to you, without ever having any idea there would ever be a candidate named Donald Trump, my diagnosis describes word for word Donald Trump. I said, you know, the answer isn't like a Ted Cruz who believes in wonderful conservative values. I like Ted. I think his views are great. I'm glad he won the U.S. Senate seat. I think he should stay in the U.S. Senate. The reality is you're never going to win a national election again in the United States by being a pure Barry Goldwater conservative, because the demographics don't back that up. You're going to win by being a conservative crossed with a libertarian crossed with a populist who happens to be a reality TV star and a celebrity and who says outrageous things that get him in the headlines 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, who is a Bullworth, that was the name of the movie with Warren Beatty in 1998, of a candidate who said whatever the hell he wanted to say without any worry about the consequences, and went from being hated and shocking people to suddenly people said, you know what, it's refreshing, I love it, and they voted for him, and he won, and by the end of the movie, he was the leader for President of the United States. That's what I described in my book, and I added one other important ingredient. That person cannot talk about conservative values. That person has to talk about middle class and working class values. Because you can't win an election without getting working class voters to switch from either Democrat or not voting to voting for the Republican. You need some union members. You need people with tattoos. You need to expand the tent, man. And so I wrote that chapter. And along 2 years later comes the perfect guy that's described in that chapter, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So that's why I like Donald Trump, because I ate lunch yesterday at my favorite sushi restaurant in Las Vegas. And the guy sitting next to me at the counter, I sit down, he's sitting there, and you notice things. And I noticed that he had, even though he looked like a businessman, and he was dressed like a professional, he had tattoos up and down his arms. I could tell because his shirt sleeve was a little bit up, and the tattoo was going all the way up his arm, starting at his knuckles. And he had tattoos on his fingers. And I said, wow, that's a little different. And we started talking, and I brought up that the last three times Trump has been in Vegas, he's at giant events, 5,000-10,000 people, and I was chosen to be the opening speaker and master of ceremonies each of the three times, because I'm Donald's friend and he likes me. And so I'm the guy who opens up for Donald Trump. And this guy was just like, oh my God, this is going to be like the best lunch I've ever had. I can't believe I'm sitting here with a guy like you, because I love Donald Trump. Well, there it is, folks. Guys with tattoos up and down their arms who are slightly different, let's call them unique, are never going to vote for Ted Cruz or Barry Goldwater. They would never vote for Jeb Bush. but they're voting for Donald Trump. Aren't you happy about that? Instead of being upset, Republicans should say, wow, we finally got someone that attracts Harley drivers and tattooed people and union members and working class Democrats. Wow, we hit the grand slam home run.
Yeah, and what I have said to some Cruz supporters, it's kind of like the Queen Mary. You know, politics is, we've been listening to the left. You're not going to turn the entire political field on a dime like you would a speedboat. You've got to start shifting it to the right, and maybe after a Trump presidency, then at that point would be a really good time for Cruz to come in and really start shifting things over to the conservative side. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. Everyone stay with us. We'll have lots more with Wayne Allen Root coming up. We're going to be talking about his dream team. And welcome back. We're continuing our discussion of national level politics today with Wayne Allen Root. Wayne is a former libertarian vice presidential nominee, a fierce and relentless defender of Reagan conservatism, libertarianism, economic freedom, and capitalism. He's a best-selling author and syndicated columnist. He has appeared on multiple national TV and radio shows, including Fox News, CNN, and a host of others. And, of course, here on the iSpy Radio and the Jane Carroll Show. His website, if you'd like to go visit that, is rootforamerica.com. And so, you know, we just had Super Tuesday. And so what is this now setting the stage for? Because we've got another big batch of states here in the next 2 weeks. What do you see the effect of Super Tuesday on that next race?
Well, you know, I think it's much more over than the average person is willing to admit. The average conservative who likes Ted Cruz, the average liberal who loves Hillary, the average moderate who loves maybe Marco Rubio, they're not dealing with reality, Mark. It's over. And how do I know it's over? Because the smartest people in the world are bookmakers. Literally, I'm not joking now. If you look at the odds makers and the bookmakers in England, they always predict American elections correctly. And you may not realize this, but on Wednesday morning of this week, the day after Super Tuesday, it came out that one of the biggest bookmakers in the world, Paddy's, the biggest one in Ireland and one of the biggest in the world, Paddy's Power, it's called, they paid off the bet on anybody who bet on Donald Trump to win the GOP nomination. You hear what I just said? Mm. They actually declared him the winner, said he has won the nomination, there's no reason to even wait, and they paid off the money in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they based it on the fact that they've studied history and nobody who's ever won Super Tuesday has ever lost either a Republican or a Democratic nomination. And he didn't just win Super Tuesday, he dominated Super Tuesday, but he'd also won, of course, Nevada, South Carolina, and New Hampshire big coming in. So they consider the race over, and in Europe they've already awarded the nomination to Donald Trump, who, by the way, only weeks ago was considered the longest of long shots at the same bookmaker. They made him like 200-1 that he'd never win a few months ago, and all of a sudden now he's done. So I think it should start dawning on people that it's pretty much over. It's almost impossible for anyone to beat Donald Trump at this point unless the GOP steals it from him somehow. The establishment decides to steal it from him at the convention.
And that actually is very interesting, because we talked with Jane when we had her on about that very thing, because Bill Kristol is out there saying now the only way to beat Trump is through a brokered convention. And I got to tell you, that really terrifies me, because if that happens, Hillary's got the presidency.
Well, that happens, it's the end of the Republican Party, and I'll be the first one to tell you, I'll lead the exodus. You know, you cannot tell the Republican Party voters who are voting for Donald Trump that their vote no longer matters, that the way democracy works is that you hold an election, and if it goes the way the establishment likes, then that's your candidate, and if it doesn't go the way the establishment likes, they get to undo it. You know, I've never heard that before. I didn't know that's how democracy worked. And so that's the end of the Republican Party. Stick a knife in it, it's over. I don't think the establishment understands that yet. They're between a rock and a hard place. And the good news was, earlier this week in Nevada, where I live in Las Vegas, and the governor of our state and our congressman who's running for U.S. Senate both came out on Wednesday morning with press releases that said they may not be for Trump, but whoever is the GOP nominee, they will stand behind. And I think little by little, they'll all start to deal with reality, and every politician in this country will have to come to the same conclusion. If you're a Republican, you stand behind the nominee, and Donald Trump is going to be your nominee, and there's not going to be anything you can do about it short of destroying your own party, self-immolation. Short of that, Donald is the guy you're all going to have to swallow hard and stand behind to beat Hillary Clinton.
Well, and I think that's so funny, actually, when you look back at the race and how it's unfolded so far. When he first got into the race, there was talk that if he didn't get the Republican nomination, that he'd end up splitting away and going to third party. And then, of course, there was that whole famous loyalty oath thing. And now it's the GOP that's not being loyal.
Right, exactly. Look, here's the thing that Republicans aren't acknowledging but should be acknowledging. Donald Trump has caused record turnout. He's not winning among light voting. He's winning with the most people to ever come out in the history of Republican primaries. And he's getting all, you know, he's getting vote totals in many states, like Nevada, where I live. Do you realize the last time when Romney ran in 2012, the entire caucus got, I believe, 300,000 votes. This time, excuse me, 30,000 votes, 30,000 Republican votes in the caucus. This time, 75,000 votes. Donald Trump himself got 35,000. In other words, Donald Trump all by himself got more than all the voters combined who came out in 2012 for all the Republican candidates.
Yeah,
if that isn't a juggernaut, I don't know what is. So if all we ever want in life, Mark, is a party that's loved, that has passion, that has energy, that has electricity, then it has high enthusiasm and intensity. Donald Trump has produced it, so why are we fighting it?
Yeah, great point. Okay, let's take a break a little early. Coming up, we'll be talking about can Trump beat Hillary, and also what would Donald's dream team look like? And welcome back. We're talking to Wayne Allen Root. He is the capitalist evangelist, best-selling author, frequent radio guest, as well as a highly successful businessman. You know, the big question here, of course, is can a Trump beat Hillary? Because a lot of these pundits out there on TV and stuff, they keep pointing to these polls that say that in a head-to-head race, he just could never beat Hillary. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, take a look at Super Tuesday. It's a great example of how wrong they are. I was on Israeli TV last night for the third time in 2 weeks. I've become the American go-to guy on Israeli TV to explain why everyone likes Trump. And I explained the same thing to them. I said, you know, your theories are just wrong. First of all, he's bringing out record voters, so don't tell me he can't beat Hillary. It's just not true. Second of all, what's the reason he's beating up the Republican field? Well, it's because Donald is so good at literally beating people up. You know, he destroyed Cruz, he destroyed Rubio, he destroyed Jeb Bush, he destroyed Ben Carson. Donald has a mouth that I call a nuclear mouth, you know? It's a nuclear weapon. And as he pointed out himself in the last debate to Ted Cruz, you know, the only reason I'm behind Hillary in the polls is because I haven't started to beat her up yet. I've only been aiming at you guys. The minute Donald aims that nuclear mouth at Hillary Clinton and starts saying out loud what I believe to be true, Hillary is a criminal. Hillary should be under indictment. Hillary committed crimes against the American people. Hillary's husband is a sexual deviant and a pervert. She will go the same way of Ben Carson and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush. They'll all be, you know, they're all dismissed by Donald, disappeared off the earth because his nuclear mouth destroyed them, and it will destroy Hillary as well. So what I said in Israel last night, though, was that look at, on Tuesday night, was look what Donald Trump did on Super Tuesday in liberal Massachusetts. He won. They could have voted for more liberal Marco Rubio, more moderate Marco Rubio. Look what he did in liberal Vermont. He won. Look what he did in Virginia, the ultimate purple state, the ultimate battleground state, evenly divided, and Donald Trump won there against Marco Rubio. And it wasn't even that close. So my point is Donald is ready for a general election victory, in my opinion. And when he aims his mouth at Hillary, I think Hillary's in trouble.
Well, but do you see that as a potential liability, though? Because, you know, if there's one thing I don't like about him is he can get a little coarse sometimes. But, boy, imagine him if he had Cruz's verbal acuity. I mean, that would be a really awesome combination there. But do you see that as maybe a liability at all?
Well, it's a liability and it's a plus. I mean, in other words, Donald is where he is today because of his mouth. And the amount of people that get turned off is probably doubled by the amount that get turned on. But yes, some people are turned off by his vicious verbal sparring, and some people love it and think it's fun. And I think the ones who love it are working class people who normally don't vote at all, don't care about politics, or they vote Democrat. And so Donald has expanded the tent with that nuclear mouth. And I see it every day. I mean, I have construction going on in my house, and I had union construction workers in Las Vegas at my home. And I know they're union because they were talking openly about being union guys and belonging to the union. And we had this discussion, and I said, what do you think of Donald Trump? And three separate union guys, electrician, plumber, and a general contractor, all three said, that's my man. And just like I had lunch, you know, in the same interview when I said I had lunch with the guy who had the tattoos up and down his arms, and he said, Trump's my man. This is a very different Republican Party, and I think Donald Trump has done something no one ever imagined. He is the third-party candidate in this election.
Yeah.
He's taken over the Republican Party.
Yeah. In terms of Trump's dream team, that was one of the reasons that we want to have you on, is you have developed this, and one of the people that you had tagged early on was Rubio for VP, and I just don't see that happening right now.
Yeah, listen, nobody's perfect. Even my crystal ball isn't perfect. I've been pretty good in my life. I'm about as good as any political commentator in the country has been at predicting races and who the candidates might be, but I'm not perfect. I also, in a recent article on Fox, which was very, very popular and well-read, one of my most well-read ever, it said Donald Trump should pick a dream team and announce it. And I said VP could be Marco Rubio. I didn't say it should be. I said it could be. But I was wrong, because I wrote it before Marco decided to try and compete with Donald Trump to see who could be more vicious.
Yeah, it went kamikaze.
Oh, just terrible. Look, Marco, in my opinion, was going to be the VP, or certainly was the leading candidate to be the VP. My gut was correct. He no longer is. He destroyed his career. He's certainly not going to be president. He's won one state, Minnesota. And he's certainly not going to be a senator anymore because he gave up his Senate seat. So Marco Rubio is left with nothing, and he could have been VP and 8 years away from being groomed to be president of the United States. Instead, he's got nothing now because he decided to be disrespectful to a guy worth $10 billion that's built the greatest business empire or among the greatest in the world. And he decides to talk about him peeing in his pants?
Yeah.
Whoever told him to say such a thing, Marco's now done. I don't know who the VP will be. There's a lot of good choices. But I know I said the three most important people he should name would be a VP, and it could have been Marco, and a health czar and surgeon general named Ben Carson. So maybe Ben moves up to VP. I don't know. But I know that Ben Carson is very important to Donald Trump for the following reason. And it's not because he's black. Don't think I'm saying it has anything to do with the color of his skin.
No, but I can certainly see the Democrats would be jumping on that. Oh, well, you know, here's the black guy in the back seat again.
Well, you know, but it you know what? It'd be the first black guy ever on a Republican ticket. So I see it as a very positive, but that's not why I named it. It's just, you know, that's just a byproduct. The reason I named it is I think the number one issue in America for me is Obamacare. It's destroying my budget. It's destroying my health care. It's destroying my choices. And it prevents me from opening a business, prevents me from expanding a business. I can't give health insurance to employees. It's too expensive. And I'm losing all my money to this damn thing. So I think if you could name the world's most brilliant brain surgeon to be the guy whose only job 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, is find a way to repeal and replace Obamacare, then Ben Carson becomes one of the most important men in America. He's the CEO of the healthcare system. Whether that role is called health czar, whether it's called surgeon general, or whether it's called vice president, you know, because VPs don't do anything anyway except go to funerals. So instead, change the job responsibility to repealing and replacing Obamacare and name Ben Carson in that role. But, you know, some of the names I mentioned that could be on the dream team. So Ben Carson, Rudy Giuliani, you need a good attorney general. Ted Cruz could be attorney general. Homeland Security, I mentioned New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and I wrote this way before Christie came out for Trump. So I don't think there's any question if Trump's president, Christie will get a cabinet position.
Yeah,
I
somewhere.
Think Homeland, because if you can block a bridge, you could seal the border. And I mentioned ICE, Border and Customs, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, known as America's toughest sheriff from Phoenix, Arizona. And I think that was an interesting choice because, sure enough, Donald comes to town a week ago in Las Vegas, 10,000 people, and chooses me as his lead speaker and opening act. And who do I wind up introducing but Sheriff Joe Arpaio? I think Mike Huckabee will have an important role. He's a very gifted man, gifted speaker, nice person, very religious. He could be Secretary of State. I think several generals could fill the role of vice president. Now, if Marco can't do it anymore or won't be in that position, I think certain generals would be good. I think defense secretary could be Alan West, who the troops love.
Yeah, wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, how about Ron Paul, defense chief?
Really? Well, let me. Unfortunately, we are up against clock here, but I think that's the important thing, though, is to be looking ahead and how do we start bringing this party together. And that kind of dream team is certainly very exciting. Wayne, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
It was my pleasure to be on. I want to make sure everyone knows they can find me on my website, RootForAmerica.com, where all my opinions are on video, RootForAmerica.com.
Yeah, great website if you haven't been there.
Thanks, Mark. God bless.
All right, thank you. As the race narrows, it's interesting that the establishment Republicans continue to be the ones willing to sell out their own party, such as Mitt Romney. Strategically speaking, this is an opportunity for conservatives to begin taking control of the party more so than ever. It's like I said earlier, if conservatives ran our party the way that we run our churches, of being open and welcoming, instead of disparaging people looking for answers, we'd be much better off. And like Jane said, it's the Trump supporters crowding the tent right now. Conservatives' response ought to be, welcome. Glad you're here. While you're here, look around. I think you'll find this is where you belong. Give them a reason to stay. Give them a reason to vote for your side, your team, and not just your candidate. I hope you'll think about it and take it to heart, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.